Another episode of Tabletop Crowd. Tonight I am here with Corinne and Julian to discuss their game, Women Are Werewolves, where you play as non-binary characters in a family where only the women transform into werewolves. I'm really excited about this project that is coming to Kickstarter soon. When you're listening to this episode, it should be coming to Kickstarter in about a week, so please check our show notes. Why don't we get started by Corinne, could you tell me a little bit about the game, like an overview of the game, please?
Sure. So Women Are Werewolves is, it's a game about a lot of things. It's a game about queerness. It's a game about being non-binary. It's a game about family. And it's sort of about reconciling your authentic self amongst people that might not understand what that authentic self is. And because it's family, you know, the tricky thing is that a lot of us want our families to understand us. And the game explores whether or not it's possible to be your authentic self amongst family and whether or not that's something you want to work for if it is harder to do so. Julian, is there anything else you would want to add to that?
No, yeah, I feel like that covers a lot of it. I mean, like, when you first approached me with the idea, like, I don't know how many years ago at this point, it was kind of like, okay, non-binary game, but like werewolves are the metaphor. And I was like, yeah, I'm sold. Let's do it. And then it just got more, it grew more complex from there.
Oh yeah. It's also about werewolves because werewolves are rad and we love them.
They are rad. I really like the two sentence pitch. Like, I can imagine that email. Hey, do you want to make a game, a non-binary game about werewolves? Yes. Yes, I do. So Corinne, it was originally your idea, even though I know you both have partnered and worked to make this game a reality. Can I ask what inspired it or what first gave you like the idea for this game?
Yeah. So back in, I think 2019, I want to say, early 2019, like spring, I think. That's when I came up with the idea. And it's because I had recently come out to my family as non-binary, I think November 2018. And I was having a lot of feelings about how I fit in to my family's spaces. My family is, you know, they're very great people. They're very accepting, welcoming people. I've come out to them for multiple reasons over the years, and they've been great every time, but it was still very, very scary to come out to them as non-binary. Because, you know, they do have some very like gendered traditions in my family. Like, you know, on Thanksgiving, the men do this, you know, the men watch the sports while the women cook. And then once dinner is done, the men do the cleaning. And you know, it's not like super forced down your throat or anything. It's just kind of the way things are. And I had a lot of feelings about how I fit into that equation now that I was out to them, and a lot of feelings about whether I or not I still belonged in the women's side of the equation, even though I knew that's where my family would just assume I belonged by default. Yeah, I just was thinking about that a lot, and also thinking about my deep and abiding love for werewolves, and about how there are not enough female or queer werewolves just in media, full stop, there are not enough. And so these things kind of just merged together in my brain while I was walking to work one morning, and yeah. The idea of trying to explore this very heightened gender binary through the lens of werewolves and saying that werewolves are inherently a feminine thing in this world. And how do you fit into that when you are a non-binary person? So that was the original, you know, seed of the idea. And I talked to Julian about it, and when it came time to try to put something together, I went back to Julian and was like, hey, you seemed really interested in this idea when I talked to you about it. Like, do you want to work on it together? And I guess the rest is history.
And Julian, when you first heard about the idea, what was it that made you interested? Like, what made you want to be a part of the design process for the game?
It was a few things. I mean, like, so Kurt and I had worked together on a podcast called Read, Watch, Play back in the early 2010s. I was in grad school. So it was like 2013, 14, 15, somewhere in there. Maybe a little bit beyond that as well. And this just goes to show like how bad my sense of time has become that I'm like, it was some years ago, sometime in the last decade. And we'd also gone to undergrad together. So it's like, we knew each other, but we had not designed a game together, or like worked on a creative project of that nature together yet. And also like around that time, I was like, I never really had a like a graceful or like a pinpoint moment for when I came out as gender fluid and non-binary to like the world. I think the first time it was ever kind of officially mentioned in any capacity in something that was kind of like facing the public world was in an interview that I did with my friend James Mendez Hodes on his blog, where we talked about an incident at a con where I'd had like some racist players. And like in the process, I was talking about like, oh yeah, like as a gender fluid person, I try to look for like other gender queer people and other queer people when I'm in public spaces like cons or like, you know, other type of professional or hobby related events, because, you know, you're trying to look for people who you're going to feel safe with or who you feel like you can relate to in different ways. And so I was always like really into games that approached queerness in different ways, like Monster Hearts, for instance, right? And like, and just, you know, games that are either very direct about it or kind of more subtle about it, whether it's, you know, subtext or actual text. And so kind of like, I don't know, Kurt, you came to me with that idea right at a time when I was like, I want more of this in my life in general, like as a consumer, not necessarily like as a designer, but then I was like, well, as a designer, yeah, too, that would be sweet.
So can you share a little bit about how the game plays?
So we got a lot of the, like at the very, very, very beginnings of this, we got like a lot of inspiration from For the Queen by Alex Roberts. And that like, that's also, you know, that's a card driven story game where you're pulling cards with prompts on them. And that's kind of the core mechanic of our game. And then it steadily like branched off and like kept getting more structural changes and more mechanics and like narrative things happening to it, where it like, you know, it starts off as one thing and then by the end it's like evolved into like something very that looks very different from the beginning prototype. But now like what the game looks like is that there's essentially a three act structure, and different cards belong to the different acts. And the first act kind of tackles the subject broadly of like werewolves and like what does it mean to be like a werewolf in this universe, because you're building up werewolf lore. Basically there's not like a rule set about like what does it mean to be a werewolf other than like you transform into a wolf of some sort. People who are playing get to kind of decide what that means and what that looks like. And then the second act is gender, and you have more questions that kind of focus on, okay, so now we've tackled the werewolf and like stuff, and like what does it mean to be a werewolf, and like what does your family werewolf structure kind of look like, but what now, how does your gender kind of play into that, and like how do you feel about it, how do you like relate to your body, how do you, you know, navigate the space while you're also like trying to navigate your like your internal space as well. And then the final third act kind of focuses more on family and brings, it's kind of like a full circle thing where it's like, okay, now we're going to specifically tackle more about those relations with your family. And it kind of, I feel like that's the point where it's funny to see the emotional arc of the game. And because it starts off, it tends to start off a little bit lighter because you're doing world building stuff. And then by the time you hit family, it's kind of like that's when the tears come. I mean, the tears come during gender too, but like it gets pretty heavy hitting during the family part. And then there's interludes as well. So the whole structure basically is each time a player pulls a prompt, they, you know, they read the question to themselves and then they answer it. And then once they've kind of, you know, answered the prompt to the full extent that they wish to, other players can ask follow-up questions to kind of extend on it and embellish. And then once they've kind of milked that for what it's worth, it's time for the next player to do the same thing. But then there's interludes between those acts where everybody takes turns answering the same question. It's really interesting to see how that goes because people will come up with like wildly different responses to the same prompt.
I think I just want to add in there that the really cool thing about the interludes and like the one of the problems it solved was that we were trying to have some amount of consistency from playthrough to playthrough, because obviously when you're drawing cards from a deck, it's hard to know what's going to come up and it's hard to keep the experience consistent. But one of the things I'm honestly very proud of in terms of what we made for this game was the interlude system that, while each, you know, phase of the game itself has randomness within it, the overall emotional and narrative arc of the game remains very consistent, which is pretty cool.
That's very cool. Is it one question that all the players answer for each interlude?
It's one question, and there's different potential. In the beginning kind of setup phase of the game, one of the things that players do is that they collect, like, together, they kind of decide what the family dynamic is. So, and part of that is also a safety tool, because we wanted people to be able to have like a chance that was really built into the game so you couldn't like gloss over it by accident, where they decide, okay, like what are the levels of kind of the microaggressions that are happening here? Does the family as a whole kind of like not get gender queerness or even queerness, or are they like accepting of it, but you know, they're still stumbling. They, you know, they think they're doing real good, but sometimes they say something that's not so cool. Or is it like really a mixed bag? And based on which of the kind of preset family dynamics there are, there will be interludes that are connected specifically to that dynamic that will kind of reflect it. And that helps also kind of with the pacing of the game and making sure that the game stays within that frame that the players choose. But that will ultimately determine like which of the interludes people get to play on.
So in setup, you're choosing that tone, which you've both written as a safety tool, not just a tone setting. And yeah, then that determines the interlude questions. What made you land on, or how do you feel about the fact that the game starts lighter and ends heavier versus getting heavy and then kind of coming back down, if that makes sense? Like, what was the thought behind that process? Because I think it's very interesting.
Well, I would like to think that the game truly ends on a note of catharsis. I mean, ideally, that's what players will hit. The final interlude card is always some kind of choice, and the choice is essentially, do I choose to grow closer to my family and accept that there is some amount of work required to be my authentic self around them, or do I not want to put that effort in? Do I not want to continue to be disrespected for, you know, any number of reasons? Do I want to pull away from my family and find community elsewhere? One of the things that we always said making this game was that we never wanted to say that there was a right or wrong answer. Whatever you choose, you know, is right for you. We just want to make a game that puts you in a position to make that choice something that you actively think about and actively choose by the end of the game. So the final interlude card, we hope, hits that moment of catharsis, gives players that moment of choice, and ideally makes them feel better after going through the heavy stuff. And then we have a sort of an epilogue card to wind down the emotional experience, I would say.
Going back to the cards, because I missed a question I wanted to ask, which is how many prompts are there in the game?
13 per phase, I think we ended on for...
Oh, yes, because of the moon. We were trying to like reflect moon stuff. Yeah. That's our very professional term. The moon's like, I think it's 13 per act. 13 choices, so it's, or options. So it's every player pulls one. So you're going to, however many players you have, and generally it's going to be three or four players. So it'll be three or four prompts, but there are 13 options because you shuffle each act so that there's a lot of replayability, hopefully, from that. And that, like, we wanted there to be enough there that if you wanted to replay it, either with like a different family dynamic or just like choosing completely different werewolf lore than you did the other thing the first time, that there would be like a lot of wiggle room for that. And they could have like a very different story and a very different experience. And we have had, like, during playtests, we've had a lot of repeat players. And it's been really interesting to see how they respond to like playing over and over, in some cases, like over and over and over again.
Yeah, because I've played for the Queen a couple of times, and I know that this kind of started being inspired by For the Queen, but is clearly unique to itself. But speaking of another prompt-based game, I've played For the Queen, and I think it's definitely different based on who you play it with, because people don't answer the same question the same way, like, ever. And so I definitely see how there could be replayability with this game. If you don't mind me asking, how is it different to the games that you have designed before? Like, is this completely unique, or were you able to kind of pull some ideas from games that either of you have previously been a part of making?
I think for me, emotionally, it hits on some, I mean, this is the most directly, or I'll say this is the game that I've worked on that most directly kind of tackles questions about like queerness, and like gender queerness, and like where it's like something that the prompts are specifically asking you always to like think about this and ponder it, which was really nice because you get at that time I was really looking for a reason to be able to design something where it wasn't just like, okay, and I can have this as a note, like, you can play it this way if you want to, like, be a queer character. It's like, no, we're actually going to, like, be able to sit down and really, like hash this stuff out. So it was unique in that way for me. But I think some of the, specifically with, like, when we were talking about character creation and family dynamic creation and kind of, like, that setup stuff, I try to pull a little bit from my experience writing and designing LARPs. Because some of my favorite character creation, I guess, mechanics or just like setup that I've ever encountered in games has been from LARP. So I've drawn a lot of inspiration from that in general. The game feels very, like, it does feel like it's definitely stands out compared to like a lot of the other stuff I've designed. It also hits a lot of this kind of like heavy emotional notes that I try to go for. And again, like, mostly my LARPs, where like a lot of the point of it is to like feel at least, you know, some amount of angst and to like deal with emotions that aren't necessarily like fun emotions, right? This definitely kind of I don't want to say it's like a cry game. I call a lot of my games I make like crying games because it like makes people cry. Because there are definitely playthroughs where people like haven't cried and stuff, but there have been a lot of players who have cried playing this game, like oh my god, like I'm destroyed, but in like a wow, this is bringing up stuff for me that I like I didn't know it was there, or I haven't like really processed yet, or I have processed it, but now I'm thinking about it all over again, because people will often like bring a lot of themselves, like do a very low alibi game, meaning that like they're playing characters who are very much like themselves in some way, or they'll choose like one aspect of their own identity that they want to explore in the game that actually does belong to them in real life. Mm-hmm. And in that way, people kind of personalize it to whatever extent that like they want to, like it's not required. Like you can play someone completely unlike yourself, but people generally tend to find ways to bring a lot of themselves into it.
And a lot of their family baggage.
Oh yeah.
Like I feel like every game is different because everybody's got different things that, you know, different family baggage that they're bringing to the table. It's very interesting. It's been really cool to just facilitate so many playthroughs and see how different like each table can be.
Yeah. When you had mentioned, Corinne, in the beginning about how, I believe you were speaking about your family specifically, how like on Thanksgiving, the men will watch football and the women will cook. And I was like, I was nodding along. And then you said, and then the men clean up. And I was like, oh, in my family, like the men eat first and then the women eat and then we clear and then serve dessert and then women clean. The men don't do anything. It's automatically brought up feelings of like, what? So I can see how, when you actually get into playing this game, how it would bring up family baggage. Corinne, how is it? I realize I skipped right past you. I apologize. How is this game different from other games you've been a part of designing? Or were you able to pull inspiration as well from other games?
This is actually the first like major game that I have been a part of designing. Awesome. There is another game published in Ninth Level's Level 1 anthology 2 years ago, I think, that I designed and submitted to them. And, you know, I've designed other games over the course of my life and did a lot of game design in college and stuff like that. But this is sort of the first major project that I've seen through to nearly the end. We're getting there. I feel like there are some hallmarks of what I like to do when I design in this game, obviously, because I designed it. I really like randomness in games because I think randomness is fun. It leads to unexpected directions and it takes the story in places you weren't anticipating. And that's kind of why the initial pitch for the game started at For the Queen, because I just loved how the story would change every single time depending on what cards you pulled. I also really like building pathos in games a lot, and games that like cause you to have a lot of feelings about things that maybe you weren't expecting to have a lot of feelings about, which I guess is similar to Julian's cry games. Yeah, I mean, I feel like we touched on a ton of different influences for the game as we were putting it together and just like pulling little pieces and mechanics from other things that we'd played before. For the Queen, obviously, but also The Quiet Year played a surprisingly big influence in this, even early on, because we had already decided in the initial version of the game that we wanted to divide it up into phases, which at the time we called it seasons because we were literally pulling Quiet Year influence in for that one. I don't know. I feel like we got a little fiasco in there in the character creation. I feel like we've got a little Monster Hearts in there, just in overall mood and everything. But yeah, a lot of games that I have played and loved over my time playing games and loving games have ended up in this one.
So both of you have mentioned character creation, and I didn't ask about that in the beginning because I incorrectly assumed there wasn't character creation since it's a prompt-based game. So can one of you tell me more about this character creation?
Sure. I very helpfully pulled the rules document up earlier so that I could reference it because it has changed a lot. Yeah. There was a point where we realized that we were going to need character creation. And I can't remember if it was in the first version of the game or not. It was very, very basic at first, just a few questions of like, what is your name and pronouns?
Do you transform into a wolf on the full moon? And then also like, does your family respect your name and pronouns? I think was like the initial, like the early version.
Oh, and my favorite question, which I think still stuck around, are you happy with your body or do you wish it was different? Sort of ways to talk about the things that trans people tend to think about a lot without like, I don't know, being crass about it, I guess. It was hard to find the right way to word everything, I guess. So we put a lot of effort into it to make sure that we were getting at the stuff that, you know, that we think about a lot, but don't necessarily want to talk about in very like direct ways, I guess.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time rewording things. Like we've spent hours rewording, like probably hours on a single prompt, like it comes down to it. Like we've spent a lot of time making sure that we had chosen like the right words and that things were happening in like the right order. And that applies both for like the setup stuff, like character creation and like kind of presenting the rules to everybody. And then also with like each individual prompt, like we have every prompt has been reworked more times than I think I can like remember at this point.
Yeah, but in terms of character creation, we actually call it character and family creation because you establish some stuff about the whole situation before you go in. But we wanted to have sort of as light a touch as possible to like give people what the info they needed before we launched into the game itself, because we found that people did need a little bit more starting information than you might necessarily see in a game of For the Queen. So the first thing that you do is you draw your wilderness. And this is a little bit of the For the Queen influence coming in again, where we're going to have wilderness cards, which are basically just landscape art. And this is going to, randomly drawn to say like, this is the wilds. When we talk about the wilds in this game, this is what your wilds are, where your family roams when there are wolves and where your family house is. So after you draw your wilderness card, you choose your family dynamic. And we've talked about the family dynamics a little bit before and how they both set the tone, provide a starting point for people to talk about additional things that they would like to include or not include in the game content-wise, and also set the interludes that are going to be coming up in the game. Then we have another bit of randomness where we ask people to draw a transformation milestone. And this is the thing that prompts a young person or, a young girl, according to the family, to turn into a wolf for the first time. Obviously, we've had a lot of games where that milestone was puberty because, we used to allow people to like choose it themselves. You always can. You can choose a card if you don't want to have it be random. But I don't know. The transformation milestones are fun because they can be so different and set such a different tone. Transforming into a wolf for the first time around puberty is a very different story from being born turning into a wolf, and a very different story from, once you hit your 25th birthday, your family conducts a ritual and then you can turn into a wolf. Like, these are all very different vibes and very different kinds of werewolf stories. Then from there, you create your character, which is just answering, I think we have 5 questions here. Pretty simple ones. Most of the information is going to go on a name tent. Some of it's just essentially to provide some prompts to draw from if you want to pull them in later. And then the last step is to establish some relationships between you and the other players at the table. And we basically, allow players to select these sort of pre-built relationship dynamics and choose one for one of the other players at the table and themselves.
Yeah, that was a really good explanation of character creation, so thank you.
You're welcome.
So with this being an emotional game, what type of feeling or experience are you hoping players will have during the game and what they will leave with?
The ultimate goal, obviously, is for player, and maybe this is lofty to hope that, like, generally this will be the experience, but like, I do have a hope that this can be kind of like a therapeutic tool in some senses for a lot of players, in that like, it's a game, but it's also kind of a tool for processing your own feelings and experiences. And people certainly, have done that with the game, regardless of us like explicitly saying, okay, use this for a vehicle for transformation and self-analysis and all of that. I've seen like players kind of naturally being drawn to this game because they have something that they want to process about either like, their own gender or queerness, or the gendering, like queer, other people they're close to having that experience. Like we've had tables of play testers who have been like all non-binary, or we've had like tables where it's like a mixed group. So it's like some cis people, some non-binary people. Sometimes it's like everybody's queer. Sometimes, a number of the players are queer. And we've had plenty of players who don't identify as genderqueer. And I think in some cases, usually it's a very queer table, but like in some cases, we'll have players who aren't queer there. And I wasn't expecting this, but I was surprised to find that like they do have like very intense and like personally meaningful experiences as well. I mean, those have been some of the criers I've talked about have been people who feel like they came away from the game having learned something and like having a better understanding of something that before they didn't like necessarily have like a personal grasp on. And this was kind of like an avenue to better understand that. And that's been just kind of amazing to behold as it happens. Cause that was like, you know, that was definitely a loftier goal than I thought that like we should set for ourselves at the time of first setting out on this, but I'm really thrilled that it's something that's kind of just naturally happened.
I really hope players get something out of thinking more and thinking directly about gender in the way that the game prompts you to. Not even, you know, oh, I want people to discover they're non-binary from playing the game. That'd be great, but not even that. I want cis people to come away from it having a better understanding of what it means to think deeply about gender and gender roles and their relationship to it. I want non-binary people or queer people who don't identify as non-binary but have gender feelings to, I don't know, I guess feel like they can identify as non-binary. Because Julian and I have encountered a number of cases at this point of people being like, I don't know if I identify as non-binary. Am I still allowed to play your game? And personally, do not like the idea of gatekeeping queerness or labels in that way. I think that they are tools for us to express ourselves and not things that you need permission to try out. And I don't know. I don't know if our game conveys that, but if it is the permission that somebody needs to identify as non-binary or use different words for themselves or anything like that, I hope that this game can do that for someone.
Yeah, I will also add, because that made me think of like when we use the term non-binary in this game, we're very deliberate in trying to use like the broadest term, like the broadest definition of that possible meaning, just like, okay, do you not really feel like, yes, I fully identify as like a woman, or do I like fully identify as a man? No. Okay, then that counts. If you wanted to, that counts as being non-binary, essentially. And because, you know, people have their own definitions for things, but we wanted to try to like just make it as inclusive as possible to allow for all different nuances in the way that people experience their gender or lack of gender.
Thank you both for explaining that. I think it'll be very helpful for listeners. Before I ask about the Kickstarter campaign, one more question. I'm going to kind of put you on the spot. The werewolf lore, I know that it was mentioned that it's different for every game. You like in the first act, you kind of build that werewolf lore. What has been your favorite piece of lore that someone has created in one of the playtests?
Oh man.
I know. I'll edit out silence.
Oh, I have so many notes from playtest and so many things where I've like circled or starred amazing pieces of lore that people have come up with.
There was a vineyard, there was like a werewolf vineyard at one point that sticks out. There's been a lot of like wild stuff.
So people are very creative with it. It does not fall into the stereotypical werewolf lore often. It sounds like folks are really...
I mean, when you start at the base assumption of a werewolf as a feminine monster as opposed to a masculine one, you're like automatically just upending most people's expectations about what a werewolf is going to be. And I feel like also adding in the element that this is a natural thing for you and your family. You know, there's no, you know, trauma or assault associated with becoming a werewolf in our game. I feel like once you take those sort of two core pieces of werewolf lore as established by broader cultural context away, you really open up the floor for a lot of really cool ideas and just much kinder ones, I guess. I don't know. I don't know how else to put it. It's the lore's all just been really nice overall. Yeah. I mean, there's always... Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was gonna say, there's been a lot of cozy lore.
Yeah.
Where it's like, when people go into detail about what the family home looks like and what it smells like and stuff like that. And that's where like the werewolf vineyard came out of. But also we've had a lot of like people exploring, okay, are there other shapeshifters out there? Like, are there like the, like, I don't know, like the hyena, the coyote, like shapeshifters and like, or like, you know, large jungle cat shapeshifters. What is that like? That the relations between different types. And sometimes it's like it comes out like very funny, or like very sweet, or just like really, really weird. I'm trying to remember like some more, like some very specific examples, but like we've had so many playtests, it's kind of hard to.
A piece of lore that I remember really loving from one playtest was that one of the embarrassing side effects that the girls would experience around their first few transformations is that their tail wouldn't be fully developed yet. So, you know, girls who were experiencing their first transformation or two would have these little stubby brush tails as opposed to a fully grown tail. And it was something that they were generally embarrassed about.
With this being such a personal game, this question is for both of you. How has this game either helped you or maybe even bettered you during its creation process?
I mean, there were definitely, we had many, many, many meetings and like design sessions for this over the course of however many years. And like, there were definitely times when we had like a meta awareness suddenly of like how it was, like we stepped out of design mode for like a hot second to be like, wow, this got real personal. Like we poured a lot of ourselves into this game. Like it's like, there are a lot of prompts that are like heavily autobiographical. And we've definitely had a pause at times to be just like kind of talk about stuff and like process stuff out loud, and to kind of like have that oof moment of like this got like really real. And it also like it felt heavy, but it also felt really good because we at those moments we kind of like knew if this is affecting us this way, chances are other people are gonna be able to relate to it also. And like I have like revisited, there are times where I've like gone through difficult things, both relating to like gender or family stuff, or just kind of like more broadly when I've thought back to prompts that we wrote for the game, or like other things, like things that other players had said during the game that suddenly resonated with me in a new way. And so definitely, I don't know, the creation of this game definitely feels like kind of a milestone that I can like continuously kind of look back on, because it, in designing it, it made me have to like think about things that maybe I was kind of like pushing off into like the very far reaches of the back of my mind to try to like avoid thinking about it. So it kind of like it in the designing of it, it kind of acted like as a form of, I don't know, like self-therapy, for lack of like a better term coming to mind. And what surprised me is that it continues to do so after, like, you know, the prompts have been written, but I find new meaning in them during like different life events now.
Yeah, I would say I agree wholeheartedly with Julian. There's so much that I have thought about and like reflected on within myself through the making of this game. And one thing that I do actually want to say is that I moved from New York to Philly a few months back, and I'm actually originally from Jersey, but you know, about 30 minutes outside of Philly. So I actually moved back closer to home when I moved, and I don't think that's a thing that I could have done before I made this game. I think that making this game helped me answer for myself whether I was willing to put the work in to find my place in my family. And the answer is yes, actually. I am willing to do that. I love my family, and I'm happy to be the person that teaches them how to be respectful of a non-binary person.
Thank you both really for sharing that. I know we checked in off mic about some of these topics, but I just on mic want to say how appreciative I am that you both were willing to share so much about creating the game. I was obviously going to play it and back the game before, but now I will shout from the rooftops about it because it's just beautiful. Before I let you go, can we hear, I know it's not fully released yet, but can we hear a little bit about the Kickstarter campaign? Just anything you'd like to share?
Yeah, so our publisher for Women Are Werewolves is Ninth Level, and they've been like a joy to work with on like multiple levels. Also, because like Corinne, you're friends with like so many people who just like work at Ninth Level. There are several people on the team like outside of us who are also like non-binary and people who are queer and stuff, and that was like that felt really good. It felt really good to have other like non-binary people at like, you know, working on different aspects of it, knowing that like these are the people who are going to be like ushering this Kickstarter out into the world has like, it's been very comforting. I know that like the chances of there being some unpleasantness with the world and the internet being the way it is, like, you know, if we're going to like end up facing some comments and weird stuff just because that's the nature of it. But like, we have such a good team that we're working with that I feel just kind of like emotionally safer because of it.
Do we have a Kickstarter release date?
Yes, October 26th.
October 26th, perfect. Okay, thank you both so much for joining me. Before I let you go, I do want to make sure we tell folks where they can find you if you'd like to be found on the internet, and also hear about any other projects if you have any that you'd like to talk about at this time. Julian, can we start with you?
Yeah, so I can be found on Twitter at YJulianKim. And you should be able to find kind of like my other stuff via Twitter. I think my website is literally just YeonsuJulianKim.com. Very creative. And yeah, I mean, this is the major project for right now. I just, you know, I wrapped up on the Avatar Kickstarter not that long ago. So that's like, Kickstarter for that's finished up, but I'm sure like that's not going to be the last chance to get that RPG. But so I don't know, keep an eye out for that in the future at some point.
Yeah. And while I am not on Twitter that much, if you do want to follow me, I am at Actual Midground, no spaces or underscores or anything. Yeah. And also for me, this is my major project right now. And so I don't really have anything else to plug. Go find Read, Watch, Play, the podcast we were on together. Go see what media we were talking about 5 years ago.
Go do that. And after you do that, no, before you do that, please check out this Kickstarter, which is going to be live October 26th. The link is probably in the show notes, and either follow it if you're listening before the 26th, or go back it and tell all of your friends if you're listening after the 26th. Kristen here. Thank you so much for listening to Tabletop Crowd, Tabletop Babble, and Tabletop Spotlight. As a reminder, you can help support our show and get it to even more listeners by leaving a rating and review on iTunes. For show updates, announcements, and more, please follow us on Twitter at Tabletop Babble. See you next week!